From University of Texas at Dallas, this is Chess and Technology Podcast Series, produced by Creative Disturbance. Hello everyone, this is Chess International Master Zura Javakhadze, and welcome to my newly established podcast channel. I mean, basically, idea of my channel is to show chess as an art form and connect it to science. Our first guest is true definition of artist working in academic environment, musician, professor, researcher, Scott Gresham Lancaster. Scott, thank you first of all for your time.
Yeah, well, it's good to be here.
The reason Scott is here today, he recently worked on a project called Reunion.
Reunion 2, actually. It was originally, Reunion was in 1968 with John Cage and working with Marcel Duchamp and Tini Duchamp, his wife.
As you might know, Marcel Duchamp was a very keen chess player, and his recent years he gave up art pretty much for the chess. Anyways, originally this piece was created like two modernist giants, right? Marcel Duchamp and John Cage. Yeah. So inspiration came from Cage wanted to get close to Duchamp, who was in love in chess. And that was Cage's inspiration. Scott, do you want to talk about what was your inspiration?
Well, I have to say, so this piece happened late in Duchamp's life for Cage. And late in Cage's life, I worked with John Cage to do a famous piece of his called Quantonomix, which was basically a chessboard of photocells. So they were, the way a photoresistor works is it's like a volume knob on an amplifier that if there's light on it, it's turned up or turned down, depending on how you do the electronics. And then when you cover the light, it's turned down. So they did the opposite, actually. So when it was covered, it turned up the volume. So as you moved a chess piece onto a square that had a photoresistor on it, it turned up that channel. So they had a matrix mixer, if you think of a chessboard 8x8. So 8 things in, 8 things out. When you put a chess piece on any one of the squares, that input would go to that output. So they had 8 speakers around. And so you didn't know whether it was a rook or a pawn or a queen or anything, but they had these 8 channels of pre-recorded music just going, blah, 1968, it wasn't computers. And whenever there was a chess move, the sound mix would change completely, and it would change to different speakers and depending on that. And so as they were playing chess, they were also executing music. Now, Cage's music was based on what they call indeterminacy. So this is a sort of using the chess game as an indeterminate match. Then I get here and I find out there's this big chess club, and I meet Zura and I meet Jim Stalling, who's the head of the chess program here, and we have an interesting talk about all this stuff. And I find out that they have these new boards.
It's DGT boards.
DGT board. Yeah. It is a board that has a serial interface to USB. It only works on PC. But I figured out how to, I mean, part of my art practice is to hack things and to tear them apart and figure out how they work.
Scott, among many other things, is a hacker too, apparently.
For music interfaces and that kind of things, I know. I mean, I worked in the synthesizer industry. Let's not go into all that. But anyway, the bottom line is that I figured out how to get this. There's a open source program that maybe some of the listeners would be interested in looking into called Pure Data, which is a kind of rapid prototyping audio synthesizer environment. And it does more than that, because I can look at what's called the COM port, which is the USB ports now, but the communication port on a PC, and that's what the DGT board uses as well. Mm-hmm. So I figured out how to get the communication channel from the chessboard and know what the pieces, which piece was moving. So was it a black or white piece? Was it the rook? Was it the pawn, whatever, the queen, and which square it went to. Mm-hmm. So there were 3 pieces of information. Now, the first time I played it, it was Zura, and who were you playing with?
My teammate, yeah. Danny Rosnikov. He's a grandmaster also.
Yeah, yeah. Danny Rosnikov and Zura played in the Anechoic Chamber, and we did a video, and it was kind of a promo for the chess club.
I advise you to go to UT Dallas /chess.
Yeah, they shot a video there. It looks pretty good, actually. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. And so, thanks, but in that game... I think it was either Zura or Danny made the suggestion. You know, it was kind of distracting because it was going the whole time. So I had this music that was going bing, 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 you know, the whole time as you were playing. And he said it would be better if it stopped when we didn't make a move. And so it was an easy change in the software for me to do that. And we tried that, and it was quite a bit better because it captured the players thinking about the next move. So they would make a move, and the music would start playing again, and you would hear, oh, it's changed now, there is a bells. You know, like I did our big fanfare, whenever the queen moved, it was like, brum, dun, you know, like a bigger sound. I think the pawns were piano, and you know, that kind of thing.
I think what it does is it's easier to distinguish which sound is which piece. Potentially, that could transform chess to new thing for the blind people who cannot see the board, but instead of like braille boards that they see with their hands, maybe they could hear the sound.
Or have it augmented. I mean, a lot of the things I'm working on are what we call multimodal. And so, anyway, we were working with Gagan Wig, who's a doctor of neuroscience, who's researching the way the brain changes with age. And we made a giant model of the brain out of his data about that aging process. And then the chessboard was moving through. So in other words, when you moved to a new square, the camera would move to a new place in the brain. And I had arranged it so that all the parts of the brain had different animal sounds, like crows, and I don't know if you ever saw this, but anyway, it was playing the music that we were describing before, but also playing this kind of ambient atmosphere of kind of a forest, you know, with birds and frogs and crickets, and depending on where you were in the brain, you get different sound fields of animal sounds, like you're going through a forest. Mm-hmm. And then the visual was inside of the brain, you could see the neuron systems and stuff. So there was like you were floating around inside in kind of a space capsule inside the brain. That's what the audience was seeing. Plus, our friend astrophysicist Roger Molina was playing our friend Gagan Wig, neuroscientist, and I was frantically trying to play music along.
Interdisciplinary collaboration in its purest form.
Yeah, it's certainly an art science one. The reason why I did Reunion 2 was this was called EAT. It was the 50th anniversary of what was called the EAT, the Electronic Arts and Technology Concerts at the Armory in New York in 1967, which John Cage had been involved in. And so Reunion wasn't part of that. It was the following year that he did Reunion, but he had already been sort of committed to using technology in his art, and so I sort of made the jump, and since I had met Zura and Jim Stalling and was sort of very interested in the idea of using chess again as a controller for music, because it has this quality of indeterminacy and not indeterminacy. I mean, this is why chess is so fascinating. Well, and you know, then this gets to where our collaboration is going, because don't we want to figure out the strategy now that we have these simple ideas of I'm on this square, I'm black, and I'm a rook. What does that really mean, though, in the big picture of the chess game that's going on? And how can the music be influenced so that it really portrays the, what were you calling it, the threat level, right? So what the next phase for me is to start to think about that and figure out a strategy so that the playing of the music that's happening with the chess game that's being driven by the chess game reflects the tension and force and vulnerabilities of both sides and that kind of stuff. Okay, my research area is sonification, which is a broad topic. And that what sonification is the sound equivalent of visualization. Mm-hmm. So you take information, in this case, the moves in a chess game, and you turn them into some sort of sound. And some sort of sound can translate at some threshold into music. Mm-hmm. And not for everyone, but some you know, and where music, where just sound in noise is, and where music starts is very variable depending on who's listening, right? So this makes it a complex thing. But there is a zone in which you're dealing with the emotional resonance that people have. People know sad music from happy mm-hmm. music and that kind of thing. And so this is the kind of elements that we can start to bring in if we can analyze the emotion of the chess game and change the harmonic structure of what's being played by the program to reflect tension or happy, you know, happy white, sad black, you know, whatever.
That could, now that thinking about it, that could very well result into people who play chess game a lot yeah. creating music during playing the game, right?
So right. If I mean, you've played, what, 10,000, 100,000 yes. chess games. And you have a sort of conception, so you could play a type of game where you're more playing to what the musical structure is than you are to the game itself. I mean, still winning the game, hopefully, but also playing good music, you know, yes. would be very interesting and very virtuosic.
This would be takes very artistic, very yeah, like take it to the next level. Form of artistic expression.
Yeah.
I think there is a huge space to work on that.
For sure.
How
yeah.
advanced chess players kind of like feel about specific moves, right? And
right.
if you add sound to it, it could transform it to the art form, I think.
Or right? wasn't there that random thing that Fischer introduced?
Yes.
You know,
because yes, exactly.
not everybody could do that. Not everybody would be interested in doing that.
Yes.
But at the same time, it's a nice extension of the chess world.
Kind of like my purpose of the podcast channel was to show chess as an artwork,
right.
That it is an art, because there had been discussion for ages and centuries whether chess is a sport or it's a science or it's an artwork.
Yeah.
And I think it could integrate all of them together.
Yeah.
And it can be.
So I have to get on eBay and look for a DGT or talk to Jim and see if I can borrow the chess.
Maybe we could cooperate with Jim. Yeah. Thanks, Scott, a lot
sure.
for your insight. It was a lot of pleasure. We'll meet next time.